Hey guys, Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On this week's show, Bon App food director Carla Lolly Music sits down with Deb Perlman of Smitten Kitchen. Deb is one of the, I guess you could say, OG food bloggers out there. She launched Smitten Kitchen back in 2003. And at the time, I guess us old magazine folks were like, oh, wow, you could launch a blog and take all your own food photography and it looks really good and the recipes work and wow, this is kind of cool. And she's kept at it and she's been wildly successful ever since. And she's still a one-woman show, testing and developing all her own recipes, shooting them, also put out a cookbook, and now she's putting out a second cookbook. It's called Smitten Kitchen Every Day. And Carla talks to Deb about the book tour, recipe developing, and so much more. All right, let's do this thing. Here's Carla and Deb.
When you're out in the world, how much bothering goes on?
None.
Really?
I'm like a short brunette in New York City. I do not think I stand out at
you
all.
You blend in.
I feel like nowadays if I'm with my daughter, though, mm-hmm. because I mean, she's very Instagrammable. She's got curly red hair. So I feel like sometimes people are like, wait a second. And they recognize the kid. They see brown haired boy and curly red hair. So that might happen. But it's not a lot. It's very little. Also, I don't go out much.
Oh, okay. Good.
I work from home. I'm a blogger. You know, we are like tied to our laptops all
That's
day.
That's right. But you are here. You live in New York City, you go out, you're obviously procuring food, right? Mm-hmm. I just think that you would be one of those people who as you're picking out your produce, someone's going to be like, oh, she'll know what to do.
I feel like it just doesn't happen that much. And it might just be that I go to like a completely no-name grocery store and I don't know. Yeah. It happens like once in a while. Or somebody will be like, I saw you crossing Third Avenue this morning and I didn't want to say it. And they'll like tweet it. I'm like, well, say hi.
Right. Because that's weird.
This is weirder than not saying hi. Now I feel like, what was I doing? Was I picking my nose? Like, what was I doing? We'll find out.
You have to be careful. Yeah, I feel like Instagram and Instagram stories really changes all of that. You know, for a person who mostly takes pictures of food, then all of a sudden you're like your real life is in there and your kids are in there. And yeah,
it is. Definitely. Like, and I feel like people really like when you do demos where you're talking to the phone and I'm like, why would you want to see me talking to the phone? But so I try to get comfortable with it sometimes, but I'm generally like pretty awkward. So it's not my natural state.
I think it's endearing. It's got to be. People are happy.
We'll try to angle it so it's like that. We're going to try to workshop it so it's endearing. But I do. It is really fun. I do like the book touring and like getting in front of people and doing events. Like that stuff I really love. But that I kind of like know what I'm there for.
Yeah.
I'm a little more awkward when I'm like don't like know.
Well, let's talk about the book tour because this is a big deal. Your book is out.
So the book is out and I'm just going to start touring right away. We're going to do a launch in New York and then going to just take off.
I know. I saw the book dates. It was like, is this a U2 concert tour? Like, what is... You're going to a lot of cities.
It's really crazy what happened. So the last book... I went to maybe like 16, which sounds like a really big number, but it's like one just leads into the other. It's not. And then people are like, are you never home? And I'm like, no, I'm home every couple of days. Like I'll go away for a night,
right.
Then I'm home the next night. Like, right. And then often I'm usually not. I'm not like, oh, let's go see downtown Los Angeles. I'm generally like, I'll go
you
in
do
and
the
I'll
event.
Go out
mm-hmm.
and get home because I've got a family and I'll save the sightseeing for when I have time. So last time I did the book came out about a week later, and so I probably toured right through the first week of December, and then there were a lot more cities that we wanted to hit, but it was already December, so it was just too much, so we added a bunch of dates in February, March. This time, we're just doing it all in
That's
one
That's what it
swoop.
Looked like, so starting in October, and yeah.
It looks a little crazy.
And you're even going to Canada.
I know. The Canadians are the nicest people.
They really
I
are.
I feel like to generalize like that is probably, like, no, but I had probably only been to Toronto once ever before I wrote a book, and now I've been there a bunch of times for different things, and it is the nicest place on earth. It is truly New York City of the North, but it's like more polite.
And when you're traveling, do you miss cooking? Do you eat out? Do you order in? Like how much of a change in your normal routine is it? And is it fun? Like are you doing research and going to other grocery stores in other cities and just seeing what's there? Or is it like, I'm here for a reason and I have to do my thing and rest?
It's a little bit of both. I would say, like, when I'm on vacation, I love going to grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to go to a grocery store and I want to, like, what are you going to do with those beans tonight? Like, yeah. I want to hear, I'm always picking people's brains and making them feel uncomfortable.
Cool.
But
I like it.
It's kind of my thing. When I'm book touring, it's a little bit harder because often the event is right in the evening, which is sort of right when, you know, you probably want to have a little downtime right before, or maybe you're doing like a little wine and cheese kind of thing, and then you're doing the thing, and it often goes late, and you're often not actually able to get good food, and then room service, depending on where you're staying, is pretty depressing. So I remember I would just skip meals a lot last
you did.
Night, which sounds terrible. I wasn't suffering. I just meant that, like, I just didn't want to order like a sad.
Right.
A friend told me that what I was doing wrong is I was ordering salads. Like, when you order room service at 11 p.m., you get a burger and fries. Like,
oh, yeah. So,
like, what are you even doing with these
salads?
My
standard room service order is buffalo wings with blue cheese dressing and a Caesar.
Okay.
It's awesome.
See, this is why I mean, this is really important. You've, like, changed my life. And that actually.
And I sit at the foot of the bed, you know, with, like, things you never do at home.
Yeah.
Sit at the foot of the bed with, like, chicken wings. Really?
That sounds awesome.
Crazy.
Well, I only can't do that at home because I have kids. I'd probably do it without kids.
Right. Next
That's
time.
Great. Okay, so I'm gonna send you a picture of me eating buffalo wings at midnight.
And then your blog or the site turns into more. How do you, like, keep that filled with content that's about what people are expecting, you know, when you're away?
So I'm really strict with content, where I really only post on the site what you've always come to the site for. I'm not going to turn it into a travel blog. It's just not what I did last time. I feel like it's such a small amount of people that you reach on book tour, and why bore other people with the details of your travel? But I actually love, like, Instagram stories for that now, because
totally.
I think it's a really fun place to share the one-off stuff, but you're not missing anything major.
Right.
Ideally, what would happen is that I would make sure I've got a few recipes to spare. I've got a couple. I'd like to have more. I'm thinking of all the things I want to cook this fall that I haven't gotten to yet, so we'll see.
What are some of those things?
Oh my God. I don't know why, but I'm like not into sweet carrot preparations, but a friend of mine shared this recipe for the blog is called A Thought for Food, and these brown butter roasted carrots. Mm. And I don't know why, but I need them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I feel like they'd be really nice fall Thanksgiving-ish.
Totally.
So that's just a small thing, but I just feel like that combination, I kind of want to do like some hazelnuts, maybe some like vinegar plumped currants. Like, I actually feel like to play
sweet
up the
and sour.
Sweetness would be
yeah.
really nice.
Spices would be good with that too.
I feel like I could, by the way, do this all day. Like, I'm like, I have so many things.
I want to know.
I have so many plans. I just messed around a couple nights ago with this sort of, chopped runny egg salad. It's a little bit of a riff of something I saw in the first Simple Fare cookbook from Karen Mordecai, but it's just, you basically take your 7-minute eggs and you chop them up with butter.
She
uses pecorino and lemon zest, but I kind of want to do this like mustardy butter thing, Dijon butter, shallots, I don't know, and then you heap it on toast. I put a bed of spinach underneath so I can call it dinner.
Sure.
You know, so
now
I can,
it's
like,
a salad.
Now it's basically a salad. Basically, it's good for you. Yeah. It was sort of fun, though. I want to play around with it some more. I'm still figuring out what I want to do.
And do you chop them up while they're still warm so the butter kind of, like, melts into
saucy.
The sauce?
I just wanted, like, a little more zing in there. I'm trying to figure it out. So, yeah, you peel them when they're warm just as soon as you can. And it's funny. People always say, like, how do you peel a warm egg? But I actually find the soft-boiled eggs are easier to peel.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, like, glue themselves to the shell the
same way. I agree. I totally agree. And when you make your 7-minute egg, which the jammy egg or the ramen egg, do you start in cold water or do you put it into boiling?
I put it into boiling water.
Yeah, that's what
we
do
too. But my hard-boiled method is you start with cold water.
Exactly.
And I know there are easier ones, but that's the way my mom did it.
Yeah.
That's the way I do it, and it's always worked, and so I just don't want to mess with it. But it is sort of annoying to watch for the point where it's going to start boiling.
Yeah.
That's not a very logical way to cook.
I know. Like, when does a hard simmer turn into a boil?
Oh, and the other thing I'm dying to make is, because like everybody, I did too much apple picking and now we're drowning in apples, and except for the bite my little daughter took out of each of the ones
nice.
On top.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
She did like the Ramona Quimby thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I want to make a Dutch apple pie.
Mm.
My next door one of our neighbors and my son's best friend's mom is Dutch, and she promised she'll show me how to do it.
When you said Dutch apple pie, I just thought Dutch baby apples.
No, it's interesting because this is one of these things that like fascinates me, because I feel like when you look at, this isn't exclusively, but in general, if you look at an American recipe site and you look for a Dutch apple pie, it's usually a very deep dish apple pie with crumbs on top. But the actual like Holland one is... it's actually like a more buttery, almost like a cookie crust. It's got sugar in it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten a read on whether there's baking powder in it or not, but sometimes people use a little bit. And there's an egg in it. And then there's a little bit less sugar in the pie, but there's always cinnamon.
So
and there's
a really
always
short crust.
It's a really short crust, and it's done in a spring form, and it always has a lattice top. And I haven't seen anyone. A couple of them, so I watch these videos in a language that I don't understand, which is my favorite way
to
learn
video,
recipes.
Yep.
I love it. And most of them are just pressing it into the sides of the pan and just really like, and it always comes out beautiful. It's always brushed with an egg on top, and it gets really glossy and gorgeous, and I just want to make it
amazing. You're also one of those rare specimens of cooks who are as excellent at savory food as you are with baking. You know, it's usually people have an affinity for one or the other, or you know, want to bake more, but really their thing is savory. Did you start with one and then grow in the other direction, or was it just like it's all the same for you?
I probably did more baking as a kid. I feel like most kids remember making cupcakes more than they remember making spaghetti sauce. I'm sure there's exceptions. But in general, you know, cooking was something mom took care of. And brownies were something like, Mom, can we make brownies tonight? Or can I make this ridiculous rainbow cake I want to make from the Duncan Hines box mix? Anyway, so probably more sweet. But on my own, it was really the call to cooking for me came from realizing that I had very little idea how to make dinner. Like, I don't know how to roast a chicken. Wow. I don't know. Like, I feel like a lot of us get to adulthood and we're like, no, I mean, I know how my mom did it. But, like, in terms, if you're kind of a perfectionist and you want, like, the best roast chicken, where do you start, you know? And, like, meatballs or spaghetti sauce from canned tomatoes, like, all those things were... I just started like looking at recipes and then I wasn't happy with them and then tweaking a little bit, or I liked this part from this recipe and this part. So I needed to bring it together somewhere, and that was where the website happened.
Right. And that's kind of an amazing thing, because I think there's, again, two kinds of cooks. There are cooks who love to follow the recipe, follow it by the letter, want that reassurance, the reliability. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't come out, it's like, it's a bad recipe. I'm not making that again.
Zero stars.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So and then then there are people who, you know, I mean, personally, the only recipes I really actually cook are Bon Appetit recipes. Everything else to me is like getting an idea, looking at something, ingredients, reading the method. That sounds cool. And then patching it together. But it sounds like you were, you know, from the very beginning, very confident about doing this.
I wasn't as confident as I was picky. Mm-hmm. I'm so picky. I don't like anything. That's the secret when you cook. Nobody really finds out that you're like, I don't actually like this that much. And I don't.
Right.
So just trying to tweak it, like come at it from a person who doesn't necessarily love like tomato sauce from canned tomatoes, and then figuring out what would be a special thing to do with it.
But and that required like a lot of different sources and, you know, and your blog started like 11 years ago or 11 years ago.
My blog makes me look old.
That's awesome, because I think that's amazing. So you have this entire sort of background, and there's been, I think, a real evolution in food media, in recipe sources, in videos, in social media, like so many places to get recipes. Do you feel like that is an aid to home cooks, that there are so many sources, or did you take a simpler approach and start with cookbooks and maybe trusted publications?
I mostly started with trusted sources. I mean, there's always been, you know, even in the early web, you know, there were always like people cutting and pasting random recipes they found in like a church cookbook or God knows where, like, you know, and you don't really know where it came from. So I often started with Epicurious or Joy of Cooking or, you know, some reliable source where I'd ask around, and I, whenever somebody says, I love like when somebody has like a little sidebar where they're like, oh, and by the way, I love this recipe from so and so so much. I'm like, that's what I write down. I really want to hear people's secret favorites. And then I start there. But it generally either a person has vouched for it or it's from a source that has pretty airtight recipes. I too do not like to waste my time in the kitchen.
Right.
And I'll start there. And then, you know, often it's, sometimes it's perfect as is, but sometimes I really wanted to do something else with it, and it gave me maybe a foundation, a proportion of rice to chicken to broth that kind of can, from there I can build the recipe that I wanted, because then I can be picky.
How much do you tweak your own recipes now before you put them on the blog?
It really depends. I would say, like, for the book, it's a much more, because I'm trying to push myself more usually with book recipes. I'm trying to get some of those, like, demon recipes right that I've been trying to get right for 10 years. And sometimes it just doesn't make sense to spend a few weeks getting one recipe right for a website.
Sure.
But
right.
it was sort of like I really just wanted to get some of these, like.
Ooh, what's a demon recipe?
Oh, my God. There is this yeasted sour cream crumb cake in the book that I cannot even, like, even for the book alone, and I tried to put it in my first book and I just gave up. I was so frustrated. But even this one, I probably went 19 rounds with it.
Wow.
Which is crazy considering it didn't taste bad in the first one.
Right.
I worked at a bakery in high school, and they always did these upside down crumb cakes. They just took probably old streusel. The German owner is Streusel. I'm just gonna say it wrong. I'm saying it's like Streusel, or anyway, let's just, that didn't happen. Anyway,
fine.
So they would fill the pan with crumbs, and they would probably just pour, like, maybe even like leftover donut batter over it or whatever, bake it like that, flip it over. Now all of your crumbs are glued on,
right?
And they would just shower it with powdered sugar, and
oh,
it was
my God.
Just, I was like, what a smart way to do it. And I've tried to recreate it so many times with the flavors that I wanted and the crumbs that I wanted, and it was just well, if you're using fresh crumbs, they're going to get squashed.
Right, right.
And it was trying to figure out how much squash was worth living with and how much, like, if you were to pre-bake the crumbs so they didn't squash, you ended up with these, like, hard rocks. And I ended up deciding that squash is fine because it tastes amazing.
Right.
You do not, like, it doesn't, it looks, it's crumbly, but it gets a little flat top.
Right.
Thing.
And I totally relate to that part of the process, because in the Bon Appetit test kitchen, we're constantly tweaking, and actually I'm constantly there tweaking somebody else's recipe who then has to keep tweaking their recipe. And there are some recipes that we are really into. We really want to make it happen. We'll do it two or three times, and you can sometimes get to a point where you're just not in love with it. Like, it's not getting better. And to put in the amount of time that would be necessary to make it something that we're very excited about, you just have to sort of go, let's cut our losses and move on. Yeah, we just went through this with a baked Alaska that I feel like I might have already talked about. But Claire Saffitz, we were so excited about it. Claire was going to do it. It was going to be in the holiday issue. Like, what a fun showstopper dessert. What a fun time. It's so retro. It's like, great. And she made it two or three or four times. And she sat down. She was like, I'm having baked Alaska problem. And I was like, let's talk it out. She was like, I'm just not feeling it. Like, I've simplified it, but I still want it to be awesome. But every time I make it, I'm like annoyed by it, and I would never make it at home. And I was like, Claire, if you're never going to make this thing, then we can't tell anybody else to do it either.
Oh, my goodness.
So let's just, like, move on. And it's kind of, you know, you kind of get that monkey off your back a little bit. And then in the end, she did monkey bread.
No, but I do this all the time. I mean, people are like, what happens when a recipe doesn't work?
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you go back to it the next day? I'm like, no, I usually just walk away. And then one day I'll be like at a restaurant or staring out the window on the train. And I'll just be like, oh, I should try that approach. And that's when things start connecting. And then
right.
I pull it off the shelf. And then I'm like, I just needed a little time and space with it, you
right.
know? And sometimes that space is 10 years.
Yeah, you just
and
never
sometimes
know.
Sometimes it just takes, like, yeah, some. Because I remember when I did a baked Alaska, one of the things was like, I mean, are we going to do this with homemade ice cream? That's a lot of steps.
Yeah.
And then the store-bought, you can get pretty good quality, but it might taste really basic. I did go with store-bought.
You did.
It wasn't basic.
Yeah, we were going to do store-bought,
for my
too.
Set, but I have an idea.
Okay, thinking. well, the monkey bread ended up being, like, great. You know, and it
people
was...
People love monkey people breath.
And we had never done one, and it was kind of like that. But it sounds to me like you're a gut-driven... You have a gut-driven approach to this as opposed to, like, a data-driven, which is another thing that we, you know, is part of our world here, developing recipes where there's things we don't have that people want, like monkey bread or slow cooker. Like, it just hasn't been a thing. You recently got an Instant Pot.
I did. Actually, I hid it for, like, 2 months, and then it, like, kind of showed up in the background of an Instagram.
And did people freak?
People freaked out. But so I've been trying to play around with it. I mean, I...
And was that driven by curiosity? They were out there. Everybody was talking about it. I mean, there's very few innovations, I feel like, at this point, like, besides sous vide and having, you know, mechanized food processors and stuff like that. Like, what has really changed our home cooking life?
I feel like this could be one of those
things. And it
seems
like it's one
of
them.
I'm not sure it's for everyone, and I'm not even positive it's for me all the time, but I'm trying to figure out what it's good at.
Right.
And, for example, I was thinking about making... because it's like finally a little crisp and cool out. I was thinking about making chicken noodle soup tonight, but I want to make the longer cooked one from the book, the grandma style one. I'm like, I should try to put that in the Instant Pot and see if I could do it in 2 hours. That kind of thing. Where,
right. So do you have are you a pressure cooker, a slow cooker
this
person?
Is like, so or I this got was... a slow cooker a bunch of years ago. Like somebody sent it to me like unsolicited as a wedding present. And this is many years ago. I'm married for a long time. And I've used it for beans. I've used it for broths. I feel like you have to use it for what it's good for to be happy with it. And I feel like what it's really good for is this idea that you could put something up before you go to sleep and it's ready when you wake up, or you can put it up before you go to work and then you come home and it's cooked. It's great for stews. It's great for broths. It's great for food that you want to be soft.
Right.
I know you can make cheesecake in it. It's never, ever occurred to me. I feel like the Instant Pot, these electric pressure cookers, because there are a lot of brands making them, is similar in that it's about how you use it. So I decided I wanted to make my black bean soup, which was originally a Bon Appetit recipe.
Oh, very cool.
I feel like, and it was for a slow cooker, but it's from way back. And I decided I wanted to try it in the Instant Pot because it uses dried beans, which is really great. And I was able to do it in 30 minutes. I definitely would not be able to decide at 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
That we're having beans for dinner.
Yeah, that we're having black bean soup from scratch for dinner. So it completely worked and it was great. So I feel like use it for what it's good for and you'll be so glad you have it. I bought it because it was Prime Day.
Awesome.
This is our new national holiday.
Yeah. Right, Prime Day.
It's suddenly a good idea, the number one seller. So I bought it because it was Prime Day. And also because I feel like at this point it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense to develop too many slow cooker recipes if everyone's really excited about their purchase. I should at least give it a try when I have time, and I'll have some idea at least of how to guide people when they have a question about it. Like now I can tell you how long it takes to cook beans in a soup. Now I can tell you.
And you can convert some of your older recipes to this and then kind of update them that way.
And something I get away with that probably a lot of publications don't is I can say, I haven't fully tested this, but based on other recipes, I'm pretty sure you can do this one in 45 minutes on high with a manual release kind of thing. And people will forgive me because I'm not giving them 100% confidence.
And
do
they also let you know when it doesn't work?
Oh, yes. And I want to, though, because it's going to – I feel like nobody likes to hear criticism. I mean, I too am like, I did not do that. But at the same time, I feel like it's a valuable pile of information that I get to use to help teach me better things.
Yeah,
help me learn about cooking. And that's something I get to do that not everybody has.
Yeah, that's one of the things about comments and – social media being part of one of the ways that we talk to our readers all the time that I love the most, because people take pictures of what they make and they tag us and we look at it, and it's like when they're psyched, like I'm super psyched. And that's something that, you know, in the past was really hard to get, that kind of direct reader feedback. When people are mean, it's another story and it makes you feel terrible, but you kind of need to read all the comments to get the full picture.
I also feel like often it's like there's 90% really nice comments or 99%, and then there's like everybody, we remember the one negative one because we're like, that's the one we keep with us. But it's almost unfair to all the polite ones. But it, but I find a lot of the feedback useful. I mean, especially like one of those things where the cake didn't sink for me.
Right.
But this is like three or four people it happened for. It,
right.
It is a problem. It's not just three or four people, you know.
And when there's, when something like that comes up where there is a problem and you know because you get mm-hmm. a certain volume of consistent reactions, do you remake it? Do you retest and like do updates? Like how do you handle stuff like that? I'm sure it's rare, but...
It happens. I think in an ideal world, I'd go right back into the kitchen and make it again. In general, I'm like working on five other things at once, and it doesn't necessarily happen. What I will often do is I will put it in the head notes. I will say, I just want to warn you that some people are experiencing sinking. Nobody has said it compromised the texture. The cake is still great. In general, I might reduce sinking. You know, I'm probably this has too much baking soda in it. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this now. As soon as I get a chance, I'm going to test it out. If you want to make this today and you're really concerned about sinking, maybe try using 2/3 of the baking soda. I do that a lot.
And you don't have anybody with you in the kitchen to kind of go like, hey, I'm working on five other things right now, mm-hmm. including 100 new recipes for this book in addition to everything else, which I don't even know how you did. Can you tweak, you know, can you make this one more time and let's look at it and see? Do you have that?
I don't have any. It's still just... me.
Right.
It's me and then like the people who help coordinate like the book tour schedule and that's it. But they work for the publisher.
Right.
So that's not, this is where I'm not like an ideal person to learn how to be a grown up from because I still haven't figured out how to outsource a lot of stuff. I did work with professional recipe testers for both books. I would really like to bring that in for the site too because this is like, I don't need to make this cake again.
Right.
I just need to know what
happens.
And
in fact, someone else making it who hasn't made it is it's better.
It's really useful.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something I have to work
Interesting.
On.
Interesting. And the recipe testing experience you was good
it
for
was
you?
Good. I think would be even awesomer if the person happened to live next door and
right.
I could physically taste and see that
yes.
something really nice you have here. People would send me pictures. Every so often, I would make sure the person lived in New York City and
right.
so I could get it from them. But sometimes the best recipe tester for the job you have is not. And
right.
so this time I actually worked with two people in Vermont. So I didn't want to make people nervous about it. but they were extremely good at their jobs.
Yeah.
And that's why I just felt like there was this airtight confidence to the work they did.
Interesting.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I want to talk about the internet a little bit because we talked about the Instant Pot under the kind of umbrella of there haven't been that many changes in our kitchens that have really changed the way we cook. But I think that that might be true for gear, like the ones that really matter. But I feel like the internet in general is like something that is changing not only how we get information, but how we get food into our houses. How has it changed your idea of what's a fussy ingredient or an unfussy ingredient based on what you can get online?
I think that's a really interesting point because I always am trying to just, I don't want to make people go to a specialty store. I know I live in New York City and I can get anything and then some, but that doesn't really help other people. But these days, like, I'll go on
Prime. We're talking
yeah,
Prime. We're
I know,
back on
I
Prime.
Know. I'm like, I hate to be like plugging one store when there's so many out there, but there's so many. If I see it's like a free shipping, heavily stocked item they have from like five different brands, I start to feel a little bit more confident throwing it in. I'll always suggest something you can do if you don't have it.
Can you think of an ingredient like that maybe 8 years ago you would have not thought about putting in a recipe that now it's like, this is around.
I've started using sumac with more confidence.
I love sumac.
It's like sour paprika. But if you don't have it, it's not going to break the dish.
Right.
It's beautiful in color. It's a really nice finish. It's lovely if you have it. It's very easy to get online, but it's not... it's great if you can get it, but it's not going to. I also feel like spices are such a nice luxury because you can get most bottles of spices for $4 or $5. It's
exactly.
not a major investment. It'll last a long time, no matter what anyone tells you. I think spices last a lot longer than people think. It's like a little luxury you can buy for yourself. So it's sort of fun to go online, or if you're in New York City, go to Colusian's or Sahadi's and pick up a bunch of
those special things.
Yeah, you can use them on the least expensive ingredients to bring a new flavor to them.
And you said that when you're traveling, you'll go to other grocery stores, which is also one of my favorite things to do. And I'm especially health food stores and bulk bins. Like I get really, it's the best.
I go to study almost as much as I go to shop.
Yeah, me too.
See,
what's your go-to
jam? What's your go-to jam texture? What is this curious take on mayonnaise you guys use for everything? Like is there ketchup? Is there, you know what I mean? Like,
what's in the produce aisle that we just, for us, is special that mm-hmm. when you're in Colorado, they have 12 different kinds of chilies.
Mm-hmm. And they're
amazing.
And they're, I know, they're so good. Like the idea of finding it like confusing to explain like different kinds of dried chilies, but that's sort of more of an East Coast thing. Not that there aren't places that you can get it, but without as big of a...
Well, then you kind of just realize like, oh, this is my normal. Even if I go to a Stop and Shop as opposed to a more specialty mm-hmm. store, what I think is there is just what I think is there. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you have confidence in... Because you obviously the audience is so broad and huge to pick those things that will resonate with people. Is it based on how recipes perform or feedback, or like how do you know?
Sometimes it's a little bit of feedback. Sometimes it's requests that I've gotten from a lot of times. But sometimes it's like you're at a restaurant and you like take a picture of something and people are like, oh my God, you have to do your own take on that. And you hear a lot of that. But a lot of it's just gut and cravings. And for me, that's how I've stayed interested all these years mm-hmm. is that it's a very selfish enterprise. Like I want to learn how to make this and therefore I'm going to make it. I mean, it helps that maybe my tastes aren't too out there with mm-hmm. cooking. Like I love to pull things from different places I've been, but I generally want to bring it down to a recipe that's very usable from accessible ingredients. And so... I think that helps, but in general, just making what I want to make a lot of times helps me want to keep cooking.
Right. You did have tahini. I wrote it down.
Oh, that was another one. I probably didn't use it as much.
A tahini babka? No, it was a tahini brownie, something like that.
I did a chocolate tahini challah bun recently.
Yes,
and
the challah bun.
I've always loved tahini. Actually, it's very divisive. Like people not even getting it as much as I feel like nowadays it's at every health food store, probably has been for a while. But a lot of people just don't like the taste of it. But
when you eat it on its own,
it's
very aggressive.
Yeah.
If it's unfamiliar, it's like, ugh.
When you have it with lemon juice and a little bit of garlic and salt, it's like the most delicious dressing for roasted vegetables.
Right. And is that an ingredient that you feel is one of those that 6 years ago people would be like, really?
I feel like that's definitely changed and it's gotten more accessible. We could probably thank Adelangi for it.
Probably.
Maybe Bread's Bakery.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely gotten a lot more. I'm trying to think of another example. Definitely the variety of dried chilies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just spices in general.
Yeah, we have these long conversations about this stuff here.
Nigella seeds are something that seemed really... somebody's going to listen to this and say, that's not an obscure ingredient. And it isn't everywhere.
Oh, that's definitely an ingredient that we would have like several long conversations about whether it was okay or not okay to have.
And then you would ask yourself, and then it kind of pushes you towards recipes where it hinges on that to make it worthwhile mm-hmm. rather than just losing people on a garnish, if that makes sense.
Totally. And knowing when it's worth it to say, like, look, you might not have cooked with this before. Like, you can't make the tahini challah buns without the tahini, but like you should. And having the confidence to tell someone to go into the international aisle and look for an item that was there the whole time, but they just weren't looking for it.
I agree.
Yeah.
What else?
Kimchi.
kimchi. Oh my God. Mm, getting hungry now. so like dried seaweed, like mm-hmm. the, like that kind of thing.
Kombu and like or the sheets.
Fish sauce.
Fish
which
sauce.
Is like, again, it's not obscure for right. most of the world, but it's just one of these things that I don't think people are cooking with it as regularly.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also the flavors that we're now having out in the world and, you know, restaurants being less fancy and less fussy and more accessible mm-hmm. Has made it easier to sort of just try different things if you haven't had them before.
Pickled ingredients.
Yeah.
Where that's more just like recipes. I have a I'm going to probably pronounce it wrong. Jardinera?
Yeah, Jardinera.
Okay, I always say Gardinera.
Yeah.
This
I had nachos with Jardinera on it yesterday.
This is one of these things that when you read about food without talking about food as mm-hmm. much. This is a website problem. Anyway, I have a recipe on my site from very early on, but I think most people didn't make it. But now I feel like you see minced Jardinera.
Totally.
In sandwiches. In salad dressings, yeah. Like on sandwiches. Yeah. Like
I had one yesterday on nachos. I'm not even kidding.
It's really good.
It was kind of weird, but it was good. I was into it.
It didn't make them wet, I guess.
No. When I had the nachos, they were cold, so I can't really. I can't really say.
Let none of us pretend we would not eat cold nachos.
Right. Totally. All right. Do you have? I have so many questions. Okay. Well, I'm really going to put myself on the line with this next question, but again, it's something we talk about all the time. And I really want to know from your perspective, home cook, expert, extraordinaire, rock star, and you've cooked from a lot of cookbooks, mm-hmm. magazines, other bloggers, mm-hmm. websites. What do you think that magazine publications like Bon Appetit get wrong about home cooks? Like what?
Very interesting.
Yeah. What do we not
we all
get
do it? We all act like we're going to a party at 5:30 p.m. instead of making dinner. I mean, we want to, but I think it's okay because it's okay to be a little bit aspirational. But we all act we're like, and then we're going to throw this together and have some friends over and pour some drinks. And it's like, come on, like we're going to come home. We're going to be tired. We're going to take off our shoes and we're going to be so glad that maybe we threw some chicken into the Instapot
mm-hmm.
you know, a little while ago or that somebody did. That's not every day, but I do feel like there's a little bit of a lift in everything that we all publish. Because it's about what we would like it to be.
Right.
And it's not bad.
So convincing ourselves that someone will do this thing that we came up with and want them to do.
Perhaps. Or sometimes we paint a picture. Sometimes it goes too far and you lose people. But I do feel like we all tend to paint a more upbeat picture
mm-hmm.
Than day-to-day life necessarily is. But mm-hmm. I think it's just because we're generally looking for a change. That's why you open the magazine. That's
right.
Why you're hoping for something different. And sometimes I'll be like, this sounds a little silly, but we do actually try to have people over a lot because I like the mix, but it's not so formal. I mean, we don't have space to be formal.
Right.
But here's something we did with this soup. We made it like sort of taco style, and then we decided to throw in this because somebody else was coming over. And I feel like it really helps for people to have a very simple idea and then show how you built it into something bigger.
Mm.
And then kind of, I'm really fix it and like how to turn really basic food into like a dinner party
mm-hmm.
is definitely something I like. I know most of us aren't having dinner parties once a week, but I like that idea of building it into something more festive.
That's very cool.
Even if I know that's not how most of us cook every day.
Well, it's sort of like taking something ordinary or, you know, not high cuisine, something like a pozole mm-hmm. or chili or, you know, whatever, and then building it out in a special way where the toppings get really cool or the way that it's presented. Yeah. Because especially with entertaining, you don't want to be that person who's like stressed out and exhausted and like resents all the decisions that
like going to a dinner party and not even enjoying it would be like what's even
right.
the point? I'm also stuck. Oh, this is something I saw on Instagram last year, but I remember it's this food writer and she did like a French onion soup for a crowd. She
Ooh.
Did it like in this giant casserole style. And you would just, it looked incredible with the salad on the side. I'm like, my God, I have never thought about doing French onion soup for a party.
Totally.
But how much does everyone love it?
Yeah. It's like when I make roast chicken for entertaining. Sometimes mm-hmm. my husband will be like, you can't make roast chicken. I mean,
yes,
roast chicken is roast chicken. I'm like,
loves roast
you know what?
Chicken.
No one ever got mad at a good roast chicken.
No.
And people do get into it.
They totally do.
What is so as far as trend goes, right? With this whole internet thing, it's really given birth to some weird trends. So, and you said just now that you open up magazines to like That's why we open them, to look at something, to look at something new, or to get a new idea about what to cook. Do people want the something new most of the time, or do people want a thing that they know they love, but the perfect version, which is, it sounds like that was part of your inspiration as well.
I think people want a little bit of both. I think it's good to mention things that are new, but not to reinvent yourself around it.
We're not going to see mermaid toast on your
site. I'm probably not going to do mermaid toast.
Did you do a cronut?
I did not do a cronut because it's like, it doesn't make sense for me to do at home. You're going to make croissant dough just to deep fry. You just lost people twice,
right,
not once.
Right.
but I also just feel like there is a lot of things that are really good. Like, I also haven't made sushi, but that's because I can get such good sushi.
But you made a sushi cob.
I saw your sushi cob. I did. I love that salad so much. It's that dressing, which is like,
the carrot
it's
ginger.
It's just like, you could just drink it. It's totally so good. And I basically just wanted to make an, like, how can I make this salad dressing the centerpiece of a dish?
Dip.
Dip, exactly. Let's just put it, like, what are all the things that it tastes good on? And let's build it around that.
Deb, I've gotten a couple of side-eye looks from Emma. So our time is running out. This is when we go into the speed round. There's no wrong answers except when other people will tell you that you were wrong. But you should just, you know.
Nobody inside this room will have it.
That's right. And like everything else that you do, just go with the gut.
Okay. We're going to go with the gut.
All right. Let's start. We'll start easy. Scrambled or fried?
Fried.
Bagel with cream cheese or bacon, egg, and cheese?
Bagel with cream cheese.
Mm-hmm. Brownie or chocolate chip cookie?
Brownie.
Wow. Favorite cookie?
Oh, my God. I'm like, you're making me. I love those Russian tea cakes, those buttery cookies with the ground toasted nuts
Ooh.
In them. I love them. They just taste.
That's your favorite cookie.
I like grandma cookies.
Okay, grandma cookies. Oatmeal or granola?
Oatmeal.
Bundt or springform?
Bundt.
Yeah, I feel like a bundt has more potential,
but it causes more headaches because things get stuck in them.
And then you're like, there's nothing worse when the crown of your cake is in the top of
the
pan.
It's ganache. It's just ganache. You just pour ganache over it.
Right, scrape it on. It's supposed to be like that. Julia Child or Marcella Hazan?
Julia Child.
My mom, I read or heard that you said your mom taught herself to cook through Julia Child.
She did.
And so did mine. And I never had a reason to learn how to cook until I left the house because I was like,
this is how a lot of us have been that way.
This whole eating thing is going great.
I love her story. I love her personality. And honestly, the recipes are a little fussy, but they all work. They really work.
They're worth it. Your last cooking fail.
Oh, my God. It's been like, what, 48 hours? Oh, I tried to pop quinoa. I had all these old grains, and I tried to pop quinoa. And there's a seed, not a grain. I tried to pop millet. It smelled awful in my apartment. It burned so badly.
Sorghum will pop.
Okay. Yeah. I just, you know, I went on the internet and the internet told me I could do it, so I believed it.
See?
It's like I'm new here.
This is the dark web.
They made it look so easy.
Land O'Lakes or Kate's?
Ooh. You know, for recipe testing and everything else, it's Land O'Lakes.
Land O'Lakes.
Or some sort of store brand butter. I don't go fancy with testing.
Yeah, I grew up
on Land O'Lakes. What do I want to eat?
Right?
Yeah, no, I'd like you know, from France in the little paper packets, please.
Okay.
With the salt, sea salt.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, salted or sweet. Where do you shop?
Groceries?
Mm-hmm.
I go to Westside Market.
Westside Market. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
I've got one by my apartment. That's basically why.
Peanut butter or tahini?
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter. Yeah, me too. White wine vin or red wine vin?
White wine vin.
Cider vin or rice vin?
Cider.
And then butter or olive oil?
What kind of question is that?
I know.
Obviously butter.
pasta or rice?
Pasta.
Hmm. Fascinating.
I'm like, is this true? It depends on the day of the week.
Right.
Yesterday I wanted rice instead of pasta.
Books or magazines?
Books.
And would you?
I'm never getting invited back.
No. Are you kidding? We publish books too. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
See you later, Deb. You can go now.
And if you had to choose your social media platform, Twitter or Instagram?
I love Instagram, but I read Twitter all day, but not about food.
I read other Twitter.
I feel like Twitter's for being angry
and Instagram is for having fun.
I get a lot more information from Twitter than I do from anything else. Following the news, following the people who work in newsrooms, I feel like you get everything first.
It's incredible.
But I love Instagram.
Me too.
I know it's a little edited.
Start your day with Twitter and end it with Instagram. If you go the other way, you're gonna have a terrible night's sleep. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and produced and edited by Emma Wertzman. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys, with additional music by Nathaniel Wertzman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.